Chuck Chad Technorama for Sunday, August 7th, 2005.
This show is a proud member of
the TechPodcast.com network.
Find out more about this and other shows at
www.techpodcast.com.
TechPodcast.com.
If it's tech, it's here.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
Unilateral phase detractors. Cardinal gram meters. Six hydrocoptic Marvel veins. Conductors and fluxes. Prefamulated annulite. Malleable logarithmic casing. Swerving bearings. Panometric fan. Milford trunnions. And the facient lunar wane shaft. Lotus O deltoid type. Semi-boloid slots of the stator. Drawn reciprocation dingle arm. Sinusoidal deplanaration. Retroincabulator.
Good evening, good day, good grief. Here we are once again. Welcome to Technorama. Take off your clothes and roll around naked in the geekiness. I am your host, Chuck Tomasi, and with me is my trusty co-host, Craig Stepp.
Hey, everybody.
Craig is not feeling well this evening. It turns out he's got a case of strep throat. So if you hear me say Craig Strep once in a while, you'll know what's up.
I'm going to come through this internet and come strangle you right now.
I couldn't let that go.
I know.
We all hope you feel better real soon.
I appreciate that. I'll do what I can. Hey, but the show must go on.
The show, yes, your dedication is greatly admired. I got an email when I got back from my trip from Craig. It said, I'm not feeling well. You could hear the agony in the email that he wrote yesterday.
It's coming through my fingers.
I may not be able to make it on Sunday's show. I went, oh, well, you know, take care of yourself. I practiced doing this myself early on. It wasn't as much fun, but...
No, that's cool.
Coming up in tonight's show, we've got... A sneak peek at Tim Burton's new... Well, we won't sneak peek anything. We've got a quick look at it. Craig's going to tell us a little bit about what he found on the internet and read about it.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about Tim Burton's Corpse Bride. I think it comes out in September. And then you've got...
I have a story of a real test of our disaster recovery plan at work from earlier this week. It was a real discovery. I mean, a real disaster.
And both.
I did discover a few things, didn't I? And I am admitting I've made a full switch to Firefox.
Yay.
I am dumping Safari. It got on my nerves one too many times. And Firefox will now be my primary browser on the Macintosh. All that coming up in a little bit, right after these announcements, these words from our sponsor.
Okay, listeners. Mark August 13th on your calendars. Why? Because the TechPodcast.com Roundtable will be hosting an interactive live event using GoToMeeting, an advanced web conferencing application to demonstrate the coolest podcasting tips, tricks, and best practices that we've uncovered. You're going to love the demo and GoToMeeting, the web conferencing tool that will revolutionize how you hold small or large meetings. No more traveling to collaborate, train, present, or meet. Just use GoToMeeting and everyone can see what you see on your desktop. All you need is an internet connection and a phone. Plus, there are no hidden costs, just one flat monthly fee. Best of all, you can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and enter promo code TechPodcasts. That's GoToMeeting.com, Try It Free button, promo code TechPodcasts. See the show notes for details and links to sign up at TechPodcast.com for the special event.
One additional thing to add to that is we are coming up with a prize package promotion thing for everybody who signs up. Not everybody who signs up, but everybody who signs up will be eligible to win prize or prizes, as it were. I can't remember. It was going around the Tech Podcast mailing list today. One of them is truly a surprise. The others were announced. I think it was Todd Cochran was giving away two copies of his books and a mystery prize of greater value that I cannot disclose at this time. So there's goodies involved with going to this GoToMeeting presentation.
Am I eligible?
I don't know. You may have to ask.
Probably not.
Probably not. I was kind of hoping I was, because I did hear what that extra prize was. I went, oh, I'm going to log in anonymously.
It's a Batmobile.
This is Angelo. I have nothing to do with
it. Yeah. Yeah, the extra prize is a full mock-up of the Batmobile.
Now, you found something interesting.
Yeah, I found this today. It's called Metro Free Fi. I found it over on Dig. It's a search engine. We're not really search engine. Well, it's kind of like a search engine to go find free wireless wherever you go. So, like, I'm going to the beach in a couple weeks or another week or so, and I went and pulled up Myrtle Beach, and there it was. Has a bunch of wireless links right there. It looks great. Gives you the Google map on how to get there and everything.
Neat.
Yeah, we'll put a link of that in the show notes.
I'm queuing something up here. We're making a last-minute change in the show.
Okay.
We're trying a new segment. This is called This Day in Tech. On this day in 1945. Okay, it wasn't this day. It was yesterday. I'm sure everybody knows what August 6th is around the world. The first atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima. That is a technologically significant event. You can't deny that. In 1944, IBM dedicates the first program-controlled calculator, the automatic sequence-controlled calculator known best as the Harvard Mach 1. Did you go to Harvard?
Yes.
Tor Heyerdahl, on this date in 1947, took his balsa wood raft, the Contiki, and he smashed into a reef in Roraima in the Tuamotu Islands. I know I slaughtered that badly, but we'll keep going. After a 100-day, 7,000-kilometer or 4,300-mile journey across the Pacific Ocean, proving that prehistoric peoples could have traveled from South America. The Explorer program was launched on this date in 1959. The United States launches Explorer 6 from the Atlantic Missile Range in Cape Canaveral, Florida. And also in 1976 on this date, the Viking program started with the... No, I'm sorry. The Viking program continued with Viking 2 entering into orbit around Mars. And a bit of an apology, because we were talking about spacecraft on a previous show, and I think I said Pioneer when in fact I meant Voyager.
Hey, Chuck, let it go, man.
I'm sorry. I got it. Nobody even corrected me. I realized it when I heard the show later. In 1990, at 12:34:56, both AM and PM, the time and date by British reckoning was 12345678900. That's a geeky time. So that's on this day in tech history. Music courtesy of Scott Helms at incoherentmumbling.com. I always forget to give him credit. Right?
Yeah.
Such sweeper lines as, "What kind of a guy?" and "You're listening to..." Well, when I'm not busy with my own dweeb thoughts, I'm listening to Chuck Tomasi and Craig Stepp on Chuck Chat Technorama, just like you are, right now.
Hello, this is Guido Tomasi. Of course, we're family. And to Tomasi, there's nothing more important than family. We take care of our own. Now you can take care of Chuck by going to Podcast Alley and voting for Chuck Chat Technorama. It'd be a shame if anything happened to that pretty little iPod of yours.
Thanks, Guido. He's always there to help. Such a thoughtful, caring man.
Yeah, we love him.
We've got a little bit of listener feedback. Mark Shepard sends us this interesting keyboard info, keeping the keyboard thread alive for, what is this now, the third show?
Mm-hmm. Gotta love the keyboards.
This particular keyboard, I'm bringing up the link because I can't remember from about 4 days ago when this email came in, and of course Firefox is being real slow, but we'll get to that in a minute.
That's the keyboard that has the keys that you can customize the look.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. They're... Mm-hmm. Now I remember. It looked like a very high-tech keyboard. It's called the Optimus keyboard.
Yeah, it's using those little technology where a lot of cell phones are using it. Mine uses it, too, on the front, where when it's closed, my cell phone's closed, it has the blue lettering and everything. It shows you if you got a call coming in and all that. It's really clear, and because it's almost... It's got little tiny pixels, of course. Mine's just blue.
Each one of them has like a little LCD in it. So if you program a key to bring up iTunes, it will have the iTunes logo on it. If you have one that brings up Internet Explorer, it will have the little E on it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very clear. You can even program them to different languages. There's a picture here of one in Russian. There's one... Oh, my goodness. One doesn't even look like a keyboard. It's just got all pictures on it.
Yeah, it's for Quake or something like that. It has all the icons for the different parts of the game.
Up, jump, down, turn, attack, chat, show scores.
I think it's awesome. I'm surprised nobody's done this before.
Probably cost.
I don't know. I think they said this thing was going to run around $200, $300.
Well, that's cheaper than that ergonomic one we were talking about.
I know. I'd consider going back to a flat keyboard to get that.
I like it.
I mean, just think, you know, you open up a program and it can change your layout so you can use the program. Or if you're playing a game, you can change, you know, put whatever icons you want on there. I think it's a great idea.
Thank you, Mark Shepard.
Get your own piece of the internet and save $5 along the way. Shop at GoDaddy.com and get a new domain name, transfer, or renewal for just $3.99 with each and every new domain product you buy. Choose from hosting, website builders, email accounts, and much more. Plus, take an additional $5 off any order of $30 or more simply by entering TECH1, that's TECH1, as your source code. So visit GoDaddy.com and save big.
This is Victor Cahill of the Typical PC User Podcast at www.typicalpcuser.com, and you're listening to Chuck Chat Technorama. Say that three times real fast. Now back to Chuck.
And Craig.
Yeah.
Can't forget Craig. Dr. Floyd remembered Craig.
That's right. Man, that was so great. We'll have to play that one again later.
Now, tell us about Tim Burton's The Corpse Bride.
Yeah, no, I've been looking forward to this movie since the first time I saw a little clip they had on the internet. But you've seen The Nightmare Before Christmas, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite movies. But the Corpse Bride looks much like that in the same vein. It's written, it's based on, like I think he said it was a Russian fairy tale about a man who had accidentally married a corpse, or she was dead like a zombie.
Well, and that's a cheerful theme, isn't it?
Well, it is the Tim Burton film. But anyway, here you go. It's based on a 19th century Russian folktale of a groom who marries a zombie by mistake. As the excuse me, I'm getting all chalked up there. That's the line there. Anyway, you know, each character, you know, when they make those little molds, they have to move them each, you know, a little bit, take a picture, a little bit, take a picture, right?
Mm-hmm.
The stop motion films. Well, each character has a stainless steel frame, and their skin, or the whole outfit on them, is made out of silicone, so they can actually carve it and make it look really nice and, you know, give you a real clean look.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the interesting part that I found out by reading this article, was they actually used Canon EOS 1D Mark II SLR cameras to capture each frame. This is the first time a movie's been captured using a still camera like this, like an SLR camera, which is pretty fascinating. And they took all those pictures, stitched them together, brought them into Final Cut Pro on a Mac, and edited the whole movie up there. Is that cool or what?
I wonder why they would do that with a still camera.
What do you mean?
Well, I wonder why they chose to do it that way. I mean, was there some technical advantage, or...
the quality of the image, I thought.
Okay,
would be,
then that was what I was after, was the quality of the image.
Yeah, the SLR cameras give you very good clarity. And I think they were actually, at one point they were looking at, well, can we take the image and, you know, like some digital camera, some of the standard digital cameras, not SLR, you can send the video straight out to a computer or whatever device and capture video like a video camera. Well, with an SLR, you know, you have the mirror flipping up, letting the light in on the sensor, so you really don't have that continuous image on your, on the back of the screen, on your camera or on a video out. So they took each picture, put them on a, you know, or sent them right over to the computer and stitched them all together and edited them up in Final Cut Pro. It took, excuse me, it took, let's see, 52 weeks to film. They got 2 minutes of film a week, and that usually only took about, it took one shot about 3 weeks to make.
Wow.
I mean, that's pretty amazing. But, I've got an SLR camera that I've loved, and then when I read that article, I was just amazed they were actually making a film with that.
It's a lot of film.
It's a lot of pictures.
Representing a remarkable... I just pulled up the page, so I'm going to give a quick read. Representing a remarkable step forward in digital filmmaking, Tim Burton's Corpse Bride is a stop-motion animation feature film created through the innovative use of editing and camera technology, based on a 19th-century Russian folktale of a groom, voiced by Johnny Depp, who marries a zombie, Helena Bonham Carter, by mistake. This groundbreaking work features puppets made from stainless steel armatures covered by silicone skin. Corpse Bride is co-directed by Burton and stop-motion animation veteran Mike Johnson and is scheduled for release September 23rd by Warner Brothers. Awesome!
Yep.
I look forward to it. That'll be one... Well, I may have to get a review before I decide to take the kids or not.
Nah, take them.
Take them. Wing it, huh?
Yes, right.
Chuck Chat is the only show that you know you can go to film or head in the kind of stuff like Cooper Geeks.
Someone's mic was left up. I think it was Craig's. Good thing we didn't say anything that time.
Yeah.
I heard a hiss going, that ain't right.
Good. I didn't do anything embarrassing on this end.
Burp. That wouldn't kill our listener ratings, would it?
Nah.
Now, we had a real disaster this past week, and I got to exercise my disaster recovery plan for one of our sites. I came in about 7:30, usual time, and started noticing... Well, I got a message on my cell phone saying, hey, one of your file servers has a disk shelf power supply failed. And then it said a minute later, and the CPU has a power supply failed. And then nothing. Then I started getting user calls saying, I can't get to our Boulder, Colorado office. Wait, I think I smell what happened. The power went out, and the dual power supplies on half of this server were connected to one UPS, and it died. And that was enough juice to get the other power supplies and things notification, and that must have also been driving the WAN router. And then that died. So now the whole site is out. So I called up our IT guy out in Colorado, and I said, hey, Richard, I think you have a power outage. He goes, oh, I just got home 15 minutes ago. I can't go back. I'll fall asleep on the road. I'll see what I can do from here. I said, okay, give me the number of your power company, and we'll take it from there. Because I noticed in our disaster recovery plan, it didn't have the local utilities listed. I went, oh, well, that would be handy in a situation like this. I could have just picked up the phone and gone, yeah. Hey, you know, local power company, this is so-and-so calling on behalf of blah, blah, blah. Account number is this, customer number is this, and go take a look. By the time we rounded up that information, we found out they already had somebody on site. They made temporary repairs, and then they made a final cutover later in the day. So our hands were basically tied, but now I went through, and out of the 5 disaster recovery plans for the sites that I have plans for, I now have 3 of them with the local utility section in there. So that was a major discovery there. we've gone from Rev A to Rev B on the documents.
I mean, that's actually pretty good advice to put that in there, because I'd never thought about that either.
No, it's one of those things where you go, duh. Should I also put the water company in there in case we have a, you know, a leaky toilet or something? Probably.
Yeah. But actually, you know what?
Yeah.
The water company is probably not a bad idea either in case you do have a flood.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, let me ask you a question. Do you see any advantage in taking, like, if you got dual power supplies in a server, splitting those up over two batteries?
They should be on separate circuits, and the separate circuits should be tied to separate UPSs for maximum fault tolerance. You really want to divide that, so in case you have an entire circuit breaker go pop, it will only take out one UPS in your rack, mm-hmm. and you'll still have the servers functioning, and that'll really give you a clue. If it all of a sudden says, hey, I've got a power supply here, here, and here that are down, but the server's still functioning, it's not a hardware failure at that point. It's an electrical failure. So that's what really gave me the clue.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
So that's my words of wisdom for today.
Chuck Chat Technorama. There's nothing worse than a geek with a sense of humor.
Got him right that time. And finally, this week, I have made the switch to Firefox on the Mac. Don't ask what took so long. I'm just an old curmudgeon sometimes. If something works, I don't bother trading it in. I have used Firefox mainly for compatibility reasons while developing web apps, just to make sure things are fine and dandy. But earlier this week, I needed to implement something in WordPress. And I was trying to publish the article, and Kevin Devon over at In the Trenches said, yeah, you just click on that little more link and you get this inserted text. And I went, what more button? He said, it's right there above the text box for publishing where you're writing all the text for the article. I said, me no see no more button. And I went, wait a minute. I got to check this out in Firefox. Pulled it up in Firefox. There's the buttons. Bold, image, more, all those little utility buttons that are above the text. Anyway, oh, for crying out loud. That was the final straw. So I've taken my critical links. Unfortunately, Safari doesn't have a decent way to export your bookmarks. So I said, fine, you know, there was a bunch of garbage in there anyway. I'll just manually enter the critical ones. And except for MediaWiki prompting me for passwords that I have no idea what they were, and it doesn't, what it's doing is it's dropping down like an HT password style dialogue rather than bringing me to a web login in the interface. And I know my passwords are correct, but this drop down thing will not take them. So I got into the one that Craig and I used to manage this show. I'm not sure how, but I got in there. But the one for techpodcast.com is still giving me a little bit of grief, but I know an administrative password to work around it for the time being. Very strange stuff. But I like Firefox. It's just a little slower on invocation, particularly on Windows. It comes up a lot slower than, say, well, I didn't use IE as my primary over there. What was I using?
Who uses IE as their primary anyway?
Well, by default, I switched to Firefox, but when you click on an email link or something, it just seems to come up a lot slower. It takes, you know, just it's slow invoking. Once it's up, I try to keep it running. So I always try to keep one window running. That way, when I click on another link in email, it's right there.
I never had too much of a problem, or it's never been a real problem where I haven't had to think about it. You know,
I don't know if I don't have too many plugins. I think only on the Mac do I have the web developer plugin with the CSS and forms and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I'll continue to give my feedback on Firefox, but for now, it's actually probably the most compatible web browser I've seen yet, but I haven't played with Opera or anything yet. Have you played with Opera?
I used it a while back. This is when before Firefox, I used it on Linux. Worked all right. I liked it. It's advertiser-based, so they got the little ad up in the top corner, which, you know, I guess you can't really blame them. They're a company trying to make some money, so.
Shoot the duck kind of thing? Win an iPod?
I didn't see any that were that obnoxious. But anyway, it was a nice browser. However, right after I was messing with that, I caught on to Mozilla, and I used Mozilla for the longest time until Firefox started getting some legs.
Cool.
Yeah.
Attention podcasters and portable audio and video enthusiasts. The Podcast and Portable Media Expo is November 11th and 12th, 2005, in Southern California at the Ontario Convention Center. Walk the exhibit hall and demo the latest hardware and software tools for creating podcasts. Hear from audio engineers about how they record and edit their own audio files, and attend classes on how to promote your podcast and attract paying sponsors. Register today at www.podcastexpo.com.
Chuck Chad Technorama presents Geek Poetry. Click not on thy email attachment, forsooth. Virus will ensue. Woe be to thee who opens attachments from unknown senders, forsooth. Attachments to thy email be the carrier of the pestilence. Countermeasures must be taken to cleanse thy machine of all known viruses. Yet more are made in new fashion from troubled minds. Do not be fooled by enticing lines of famous people clad not. Do not be fooled by threatening lines of your money's in jeopardy. Do not be fooled by luring lines of easy security and improved functionality, forsooth. Stay the straight and narrow. Use wisdom where email attachments are in doubt. If the sender is known not, let the attachments alone.
Well, we hope that was useful advice, whatever he said.
Forsooth.
Forsooth. Whatever that means.
No kidding.
It is Sunday night, and as such, we're going to have a Sunday featured techpodcast.com partner. Unfortunately, I was away again this weekend, and I did not have time to call anybody on Skype, so I will take a standard script right from our own wiki. Tonight's featured site is the Mike Tech Show. The Mike Tech Show discusses cool sites, software, tips, tricks that will make you more productive at home and at work. This week, Mike talks about his experiences with his iMac, hardware problems he encountered while consulting, and how he used his uninterruptible power supplies to get through a power outage. You can check out the show at miketechshow.com. Good show. I listen to that one regularly.
Cool.
Hi, this is Tim from Winecast, and when I want to get in touch with my inner geek, I go to Chuck Chat Technorama. 101, guys.
You know what?
What's that?
We're done.
Oh, man. That went quick.
That went quick. It always goes quick. We're not over the time. We're actually under the time by just a hair.
Why don't we just sit here and listen to each other not talk? I'm sorry, I don't think we can sit here quietly.
We can't sit here quietly.
It's worse than my kid.
That's worse than the kids.
I agree.
Then you're not feeling well, so I'll do the contact us information.
All right.
Don't worry, I got everything already queued up.
Okay.
Get a hold of us on the listener line, 206-222-CHAT, that's 2428. Or you can email me, Chuck at ChuckChat.com. Craig is KeyboardMonkey at gmail.com. Our website, as always, is www.chuckchat.com. Parting words of wisdom, Craig?
Yeah. You know, Unix is user-friendly. It's just very selective on who its friends are.
Oh, good one. I like that. Don't forget to stop by the website. We've got all kinds of stuff there. Forums, which I desperately need to check back into. I know people have been posting there, and I thank you very much. We also have links to the Cafe Press stuff and many, many more things. Thank you for listening, and a binary high five.
101, y'all.
Get some rest, Greg.
All right.